football on Off the Ball.
It's a hammer blow for the league in many ways. Damien Duff and Champions League football sounds great together.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Now to a story that we've been covering a good bit over the last while, the quarterfinals pairings for the LGFA Championship are now known. Ciara Trant and Rachel Sheehan are with us. Before we get into the specifics of Kildare's amazing win last weekend, Ciara, I wanted to ask you a little bit about how the game is doing by comparison with the super sore away success of the men's football championship this year, which is obviously the hottest thing in world sport right now. Are the women looking at this going, oh Jesus, I could do with a bit of that?
Yeah, I think the lads game is, and the new rules is doing better than everyone thought it would this soon. Like, there's so much energy and positivity around it. I think, look, not all ladies football teams, not all inter-county teams play this ultra defensive kind of style that we've seen in the men's game. Kerry don't, Dublin don't, you know, Kildare kind of don't either. There's a couple of teams in there, but then you look at the likes of Meath, Donegal, you know, Tipperary to an extent, very defensive. Probably feel they have to be. This is their style of play and this is how they're going to get over the line. But some of the games can be very, very, very boring. Armagh as well. But not all ladies football teams want to play like that. So I don't think it's as rampant through the game as it was in the men's game. But you look at how, you know, I suppose the men's game isn't as flowing, but how many scoring opportunities there are and how many more moments of magic and class and entertainment there are in the men's game. And that's something that I suppose everyone's envying. It's kind of what hurling has. Men's football kind of has it a bit more now in abundance. And yeah, you'd be jealous of it, all right.
So how easy would it be to adapt some of the more obvious rules? Like, we're not saying cut and paste exactly what the FRC have done, because obviously you don't need to. There already is the Hooter, etc. But are there some obvious ones that could just be transposed over the winter and go, okay, we've seen this. There's ample evidence that this is a good idea. Let's go through our own process.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think the tree up is great. The tap and go is fantastic. I think the discipline rules, the moving the ball forward for cheeks to the referee or, you know, mouthing or anything like that, not handing the ball back. Love that. It's made a massive difference in men's games, particularly at club level. One rule I don't think would work too much, maybe it would be like the kick-out rule. I don't think that kicking the ball outside the arc will work as much in ladies football because you just don't have the fielders of the ball as you do in men's. But then if you were to introduce it, would that, you know, force women to improve the skill of fielding the ball and stuff like that? I have my doubts around that. But like I like our, you know, we obviously had the Hooter. I like our sin bin rule. I think that's effective. But one or two tweaks, like why not try? Let's see how it gets on. But like they're, you know, those three are a roaring success in the men's game. So kind of, I think the buy-in to, if we were to introduce them, the buy-in would be there straight away.
What do you think, Rachel?
I was actually going to have to strongly disagree with the sin bin rule, Ciara. It was one of my first ones to bring up, probably because I'm on the receiving end of it too often, maybe myself. It's something I need to look at. But we had four matches at the weekend and you had three sin bins. So that's 10 minutes in each match that you're down a player. Obviously, that team then is going to go ultra defensive if you're down one of those players. So for me, I think the sin bin, it just either change the rules around physicality and leave the sin bin there. That's fine.
What if you had the sin bin plus the three up though, and you, the ultra defensive? So the punishment is actually way more severe, which will surely incentivize people not to get sin binned.
Yeah, but then I don't know, does that take, I think it's more the physicality rule has to be changed.
Okay.
Because
what were the sin bins for, as a matter of interest?
Well, the most notable one was against Vicky Wall for charging. You know, Nadine Doherty had a brilliant piece in the Indo about Vicky Wall is held to a higher standard because of her power and pace. So when she's coming at a player and charges, they get knocked down and it's a yellow card. Whereas it's in the rule book that if you just charge, it's a like a tick. But if you charge with pace
intent.
And intent,
yeah.
It's a yellow card.
Malice aforethought, yeah.
You know, Vicky Wall only moves with intent.
I think in that case, she was already on two ticks as well. So in ladies football, if you get her three ticks, it's an automatic sin bin, like something like a foul count. But I'd agree in that the tackle, the definition of the tackle, the interpretation of the tackle and the application of that rule by referees is a problem in every game at every level in ladies football.
Is it like it's written down objectively, the definition of a tackle, but it's refereed subjectively, I imagine, because there's too much ambiguity with it, is it?
Yeah, and there's an element of, you know, it's a fair contest and the speed at which the game is being played sometimes and the honesty in which girls are playing the game. Like, you're only technically allowed to go for the ball when it's being held out from the body. If a player is holding it into their body, you're not allowed to touch them or the ball. Mm. Sure, we know that doesn't happen. And, you know, if referees are applying the rules strictly, the whistle's going to be blown every 20 seconds, possibly less in a play, you know. But, you know, at the same time, clubs and counties need to bring that to Congress and suggest an option and change in the rule. And, you know, that process needs to be applied if you're going to change the rule. But I think it needs to be looked at again in terms of, you know, just how the game is being played now.
Yeah.
You know, it's different to what it was when that rule was first established, the game was first established. And I just, yeah, I think you need to tweak the tackle rule and that will see less ticks and less sin bins.
What would the ideal result of tweaking the tackle rule be for you?
Just allow, like, sometimes you just put the hand in, swipe the ball and you might touch their arm and it's a free against you. And you're going, what was that for? You know, and sometimes I remember in training, we'd ask for the whistle to be blown constantly. Anytime we touch the player, will you blow the whistle? Because we're getting pulled up on this in matches and this is just how we're training. When, you know, management want you going, taking lumps out of each other and hell for leather in your, you know, your in-house game before, you know, championship or whatever. And then you go into a match and the referee's just applying the rules. But some referees let it go, some don't. You kind of know nearly which referees. And once you've been around the block a few times, you know what you're going to get from certain referees. But it just kills the flow of the game. But I don't know how to redefine it. I actually haven't bothered trying that myself.
So physicality aside, what about the others?
I don't know about the two-pointer. Like in Kerry's first game against Mayo, they hit three of them, you know, from outside the arc. And we saw a couple more at the weekend. I asked the Kerry boss, Mark Burke, what he'd think of it, and he was pretty against it as well.
You get 2 points for a 45. Nobody's kicking them. I don't know. Like, I'm indifferent about that. Why not? Like, but Kerry can kick them. You know, not every county has players that are going to, you know, kick them.
Yeah, it's another one of those, if you put it in, will people train towards it, like the fielding?
I don't know. Like, I think if you look at a lot of ladies football games, most of the shots are taken from inside the D, if not on the 21. So it's a skill that we need to develop more. Maybe two-pointer will push that a little bit. But like, you look at the men's game, there are only certain lads that are going to go for it. They've nearly been identified who are our two-point kickers and who's not allowed waste possession by kicking.
Strict rules. We can hear from Mark Burke now.
It was a goal fest today, but we saw some savage shooting last week against Mayo, particularly 3 points that were probably scored from outside that arc.
Yes.
Is a two-pointer something you'd like to see brought into the game?
Probably not. The size four ball is just very hit and miss with it. The five ball is probably, okay, but the four ball is, you know, I mean, obviously it would be great and more exciting. Come near the end of a game where a team is 1 or 2 points down that they could get a draw or win with the two-pointer. But, you know, I mean, I think it might turn into something else, a different type of beast if you introduce that into the women's game. But who am I to make judgment and things?
I think everybody initially is like, no. And then is this the type of thing that, like, there needs to be an FRC?
Yeah.
Go off, do the research, trial it in the league, have a year of it and then see what happens. Because there is a possibility here that this gets left behind, that actually everybody's watching the men's going, that's way better than this.
I think so. Because ladies football had been brilliant. You know, when the men's game was suffering, everyone was saying the ladies game is actually better. There's more scores. It's more free flowing. And we've just gone a bit static. So I think just a couple of changes, especially the kick and goal, I think that would add a huge flow, and the tree up. They're definites. And I don't see any harm in introducing the two-pointer. It's not like, you know, people don't have to kick them and you'd learn pretty quickly not to be
going
first.
It'd be more exciting, was what Mark Burke said. Like, that sounds good.
Yeah.
But is the game standing still comparatively to the men's game or independently?
I think independently. You know, you see some of the results. We've had some very poor matches over the championship so far. Like, hopefully we'll see a bit more exciting results and, you know, levels and level out in the quarterfinals. But it just seems some very low scoring. Like, I think it's like 2-6 to Donegal scored over two matches. And we want to see more than that. And I assume you would as well, Ciara.
Yeah, like, I think that's the case every year, nearly. Like, the ladies football doesn't light up until you get to some quarterfinal clashes, and then the semi-finals, you're guaranteed a bit of entertainment. But I've been thinking about this, and how do you, like, is there a format change needed? You have this condensed season, so yeah, only having three in a group, kind of, it's what they have to do. Like, you look at, say, Donegal there and Tipperary. Tipperary have only won one match in their All-Ireland quarterfinal. Should they be playing more games? Are we going to get more entertainment if teams have more to play for, if there's more on the line? Like, Tipperary knew they only had to beat Donegal to get it to a quarterfinal, you know, and Donegal the same way around, they only had to beat Tipperary. They knew they weren't going to beat Galway. So I think maybe a format change there, but then, yeah, I don't know. But there, yeah, some of the matches, you kind of, they're foregone conclusion. You look at Leitrim, Dublin and Waterford knew that whoever had the biggest score difference could put up the biggest score against Leitrim were going to top the group. After they drew. So yeah, some matches are dud matches, but I don't know how you change that either.
Yeah, this is kind of turning into like a State of the Union podcast, but like, it is a necessary conversation. Like, what actual tangible impact is the split season having at the moment, Ciara?
I think it's having the same effect on well, probably to a greater extent on ladies football and Camogie, but It's the time for the matches and to get to the matches and to see them. You know, there's constant clashes with everything. There's clashes with club games and stuff like that. Whereas if you had a week off in between every match, you know, you've time to train, you've time to practice. There's less fatigue. There'll be more coverage. People who haven't been able to go see a match this year might get to one next year, you know, or might get to two next year. The crowds aren't the same. I know we had great coverage on TVG Car last year of the matches, which was fantastic. But there's just, I don't know, we're just not getting the same back, like, as spectators and as lovers of the game. We're not getting the same back across all codes as we did pre-split season. And I think just because of where ladies football and even Camogie are at in terms of viewership and, you know, attendances, I think they're hurting a little bit more. But like, even look at some of the hurling games of the weekend, you were guaranteed, you know, full stadiums, and we didn't have them over the weekend either. So I don't know, is it hurting people that everything is just, you know, one after the other constant, that there's no break?
Yeah, because even...
Again, another question I don't have a full answer for.
No, but it's important to ask it just generally anyway. So like... Are you excited for the All-Ireland quarterfinals? So they're Saturday week. So I think I'm right in saying that all four games are on the one day.
There's one on the Sunday.
One on Sunday, yeah. Meath Tipperary's on Sunday.
Which is causing controversy as well.
Why is
because
that?
It's listed pretty much for the same time as the hurling semi-final, which Tipper in. And
the
potentially...
The second men's semi-final.
Semi-final. And potentially Camogie as well is being...
Right.
Tipperary could be playing as a doubleheader. So you could have Tip Hurling and Camogie on Croke Park as a doubleheader, fine, but Tipperary football then being played pretty much at the same time down in Navan. So there has been calls last night for the LGFA to change that, just for Tipperary, that fixture to be put on the Saturday. So if you are supporting both, you can go on the Saturday and the Sunday.
Mm. But would you be excited about these quarterfinals at the same time? So there's those three on the Sunday. So you have Dublin, Cork, Galway, Waterford, Kerry, Kildare, and then there's that Meath Tip game the next day. So like, we haven't got into the games yet, and we will do that next week closer to the event. But like, despite all the problems that we're having, like, are the problems so substantial that it actually tames the excitement of the last eight here?
Not for these. I don't think, like you were saying, in the group stage maybe, but you know, just have some absolute crackers here, especially like fair play to Kildare coming through those group stages. You know, that's just unbelievable achievement for them. Probably unlucky that they've come up against Kerry, you know, in that quarterfinal, because Kerry just looks so strong. you know, they're coming from strength to strength every match. But Galway Waterford, I think, should be a cracker. I went to Waterford in Dublin a couple of weeks ago down in Dungarvan, and again, smaller pitch, but great crowd, and the atmosphere was unbelievable. So I think Galway have been playing really well this year, you know, beating all Ireland finalists last year. And Dublin and Cork, you'd fancy Dublin, I hate to say it, but Cork put up such a good performance against Kerry in that first half. Like, we've seen what they're capable of now, and they're scoring goals as well, which is important. So yeah, I think they should be brilliant.
Kira, is there a thing that the provincial championships are less important than, or are given overblown significance in the women's game as well? I want to add, but people will kill me for that. Like, Armagh are guaranteed protected from relegation, even though they're in a relegation playoff, but they got beaten by Kildare. Is there no punishment for that?
I think it kind of nearly depends on the province. Like, Munster is flying, Leinster is starting to gain a bit of momentum. You know, Connacht, we get Leitrim thrown in there again this year, but it's usually just Mayo and Galway playing off a final. Ulster used to be very competitive. It's lost that edge. I think they're more competitive than the men's game. And I think there's more on the line. I think they carry more weight than the men's game. So I wouldn't be quick to get rid of them in that sense. But yeah, no, I think they have their merit. Like, there was a few seasons with Dublin. Like, there was one year we were the only senior team. So did we win Leinster that year, or was there no Leinster kind of thing? And it was us and Westmeath for a while. But now you see, you know, Kildare and Meath, and it's competitive in Leinster now, where it wasn't for the guts of 10 years. Like, and if we abolished the provincial championship, then you wouldn't have had that competitiveness that obviously has stood to Kildare this season. You know, thank God for competitive games in Leinster for them. So I wouldn't be quick to get rid of them. I think the weight of them is justified. It's just unfortunate now with the way Connacht has gone and Ulster, and that they're less competitive, and kind of you're more looking at the knock-on effect of them rather than what they're actually worth. But I think they can come good again.
What has happened to Armagh?
To be fair, not too much. You know, they just had they were up 4 points with 3 minutes to go against Meath, ended up having a draw, and then lost to a good Kildare side by 2 points at the weekend. So, you know, it's not as bad of a state of affairs as it probably looks from them not qualifying. And even spoke after saying that it's not like they had a bad year. They felt like they were going good in training. They felt like they were playing well. Like, if they'd had a different 30 seconds in the last game against Meath, they'd be looking to go through. You know, it's such fine margins. So I think they will be gutted, but it's not like they're out of the scene at all in the future. Obviously, they are this year.
We might switch the attention to Camogie. You're covering game for us this weekend.
Yes, best game of the weekend.
This is Galway Waterford, is it?
Galway Waterford, yeah. So final group games this weekend in the round robin stages. So group one, if Cork and Tipperary barring some outlandish results at the weekend, you'll have Cork go through top spot straight to the semi-final, Tipperary finishing second and Clare finishing third. Wexford, relegation final, and they've yet to play Cork as well this weekend. So that's already a bit of a done deal. Group two then, though, is a lot more exciting. You have Galway, Waterford and Kilkenny all going through to the final six, but a straight shootout this weekend between Galway and Waterford to see who takes top spot and the semi-final spot. So I'll be going to that in Athenry at 1:15 on Saturday. Both teams like flying. Colin Murray said even at the weekend that Galway's second half against Kilkenny was the best hurling that they played all year. So they're really peaking at the business end of the championship. And Waterford obviously made history by beating Kilkenny for the first time in their first match of the group, and had an unbelievable display against Dublin at the weekend in Waterford on Sunday. I went down to it, and that first half of Camogie was like one of the best I've seen in a long time. Right. You know, it was a roasting hot day. Conditions were perfect. The wind was causing a bit of chaos, but first half was intensity was unbelievable. Waterford still managed to go in 5 points ahead and then just took control in the second half. You know, they kept Dublin scoreless for the first 20 minutes of the second half, and Dublin had to win that to stay in the championship, you know, so they were giving it their all. So Waterford will be not quietly confident, but, you know, they'll be happy with the way they're going up and looking to make history again, beating Galway on the road at the weekend.
Has the fallout from Scartgate been predictable somewhat, that there, I mean, at the time there was a lot of calls. It was like, now, you know, people should start supporting the Camogie more than they actually are, and it feels like it kind of slipped away because there was a lot of passion during that time, and it feels almost like a lifetime ago already.
It does, yeah, it does. I think like the matches I've been at, there've been great crowds,
right?
You know, and I like what Scorgate did was it like it gave people like faces behind the names. Like everyone now knows Aisling Maher, they know Niamh Rocket, probably knew Aisling Thompson already, but they're putting faces to these Camogie players. And now when people hear, oh, Waterford are going well, they'd be like, oh, well, I know Niamh, you know, from being on the news and everything. So it probably did have in the end a bit of a positive knock-on effect, but I think everyone was just happy to put that behind them as well at the same time. And with the two quarterfinals being played as a doubleheader with the hurling semifinals, yeah, it's a brilliant opportunity, especially potentially you could have Kilkenny-Tipperary doubleheader. Now, I know technically I think Kilkenny and Tipperary will be down for the Saturday match, but surely,
presumably they'll fix that.
Surely, yeah, you'd go
we're presuming
doubleheader. That
I'm
would
hoping.
Be incredible. You know, you'd be always asking to pack Crow Park, and like, there's no better excuse for that now.
All right, we'll leave it there, folks. Thanks a million, Ciara Trant and Rachel Sheehan.